Natasha Bollins is a farmer, author, and creator of the multimedia project The Color of Food, which explores in words and pictures the changing face of farming in present-day America. Her book, The Color of Food, Stories of Race, Resilience, and Farming, was developed through her multimedia project. She talked with Cincinnati Zoo Director Thane Maynard about how food and farming connects us to and teaches us about our heritage.
Hi, Natasha Bollins. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, your new book, The Color of Food, really is a thing of value. I think everybody listening knows that this new food movement has opened up the joy of food and eating, but a lot of times the people that grow the food stay sort of unsung, and your book certainly celebrates their lives.
Well, I appreciate those words.
Tell us a bit about how you embarked on this idea of really looking into, as the subtitle of your book says, the stories of race, resilience, and farming.
Well, for me, as a young farmer myself, I started immersing myself in the food movement and wanting to learn how to grow my own food about 5 or 6 years ago. And I started to instantly start to feel like before I dug any further into the soil, it was really important for me to dig into these kinds of stories. You know, growing up as a biracial woman and having descended from, you know, African Americans who came here and were a part of really building the agricultural industry that we have in this country today, and having that connection through my father and my great-grandmother, and not digging into that as someone who was also stewarding this land, or digging into the stories of people who were stewarding this land before any of us arrived here and who continue to steward the land today and really preserve agriculture and its sacred contribution to culture. It's so much bigger than food, really. And so I really felt like digging into these stories. Also, around the time that I was starting the idea of this project, some discrimination settlements were happening with lawsuits against the USDA for discrimination for black farmers and many farmers of color. And so it was all kind of swirling together as something that, you know, some stories that really needed to be told.
Well, you know, one of the things that amazes me about the modern food movement is, of course, farming is a slow process. You have to have a lot of patience. And we're in a hurry-up offense kind of a world these days where everybody has all the information they could possibly find, I guess, on their telephone. Have you found it interesting to meet all these folks that are willing to say, hey, we're going to go with the pace of the land?
Oh, definitely. You can't really fight against the land. You can't fight against Mother Nature. I think farming, you know, is a definitely a hard job where you're juggling a lot more than just the agricultural practices. You know, you're juggling many, many skills as a farmer, from running a full-time business, marketing, and getting your product to market, and all of these other skills that are involved that require you to also kind of have this hurried, rushed life. But when it comes to the plant and everything that's involved and the weather that's involved, you know, you're up against Mother Nature, and you've got to slow down and you've got to work with her. And a lot of these farmers definitely teach you that.
And of course, the other thing is that it's very hard work. And so many people today live in cities where we all, you know, have jobs and do something, but often it is not physically hard. And certainly a rural lifestyle, in particular farming, really bring that kind of physical hard work.
Oh, definitely. There are a lot of farmers, particularly elder farmers, farmers who were really doing it alone, small farmers who were running their farm completely alone. One of my favorite farmers was Sandra Simone in Alabama, and she was running her farm alone, and she was recently nominated Farmer of the Year by the Alabama NRDCS. And they'll be the first ones to tell you that this is hard work. And, you know, I think it's one of the reasons that we're seeing a drop in farming, people who are going into agriculture, young people who aren't really so eager to pick up the pitchfork, because it is that hard physical labor. And we've been spoiled as a society now where we can sit in a comfy chair and air conditioning and and do our work. But who's going to grow our food? You know, we have to really think about what we're willing to invest in our food.
And, of course, organic farming that you also explore in your book is harder still without the conveniences of modern pesticides and some modern fertilizers. But have you found a fair number of people that are excited about trying to get back into growing naturally?
Definitely. Actually, a lot of the black farmers in the South that I interviewed were members of a new organization called the Southeastern African American Farmers Organic Network. And they're all about supporting black farmers transitioning from conventional to organic growing. Farmers that may be growing organically and may always have been, farmers that have maybe not and have been growing more conventionally, but really wanting to make that transition and become certified organic. It's not only a great way to get your product to market with the growth of the organic movement, food movement, but the executive director, Cynthia Hayes, said that, you know, with the rapid loss of black land, black farmland, black farmers are losing their land at three times the rate of white farmers. You know, she sees the organic movement as a way to save black land. Transitioning and hitting that market is a really great way for farmers to kind of rejuvenate their businesses.
So how about on the consumer side? You know, many people today are aware of farmers markets. They sprout up in cities, they sprout up in neighborhoods, certainly seasonally. There are many right here in Cincinnati where I live. Is that a great way for people to plug in sort of one-on-one with farmers? Or what's your suggestion about how listeners might be able to support the food movement?
I think it's a great way to plug in with farmers at farmers markets, but I think that there's a lot more that can be done in looking up your local agricultural extension office and finding out if they work with you know, any of the small farmers, particularly farmers of color that may not be heard as well or may not be represented or may not be able to kind of access a lot of that support as much, and really becoming an advocate for your community farmer by connecting with local organizations that might be doing training or any kind of support for farmers, sharing some of the stories, like the stories in the Color of Food book, and just really immersing ourselves in what our food system means from seed to table and everyone that's involved in that process. Getting those stories out there and having those conversations.
You know, at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden where I work, we have a farm out in the country where we do everything from breed cheetahs and keep some surplus animals temporarily. But we also work with a local group called Green Bean Delivery who grow organic vegetables. And we don't get a cash payment, but we take our payment in vegetables and we provide those for a local community center right here in an urban neighborhood. And that's been quite a learning curve to bring great big bags of fresh vegetables where a lot of folks maybe haven't cooked anything like that in a long time. Have you found sort of a learning curve anywhere, or tell a great story of where fresh food is sort of making a comeback?
Yeah, I think that there's some great initiatives that I've seen out there where, you know, fresh foods are making a comeback. And it's really, I like to call it a comeback instead of introducing new foods. You know, for example, there was a farmer on the Cherokee Reservation in North Carolina who, he runs a seed bank organization, the Center for Cherokee Plants. And he's bringing back heirloom Cherokee plants, healthy heirloom Cherokee foods that may have been lost. And he's bringing these seeds back, he's propagating them and giving them out in garden kits. So not only, you know, maybe doing a food drop of healthy food, but it's really important that we're not only just dropping food off in communities that may not have that access, but really encouraging ownership over food and giving the skills back, you know, kind of rejuvenating the skills to grow your own food. And so they go around, they give out these garden kits to all the members of the Cherokee Nation on the reservation there. And then they have a mobile classroom where they're going around and doing gardening skill workshops and meeting people where they're at, but they're also doing storytelling and people remembering some of these Cherokee seeds that used to be around. And so that's not only addressing food access, but it's really preserving culture and building community.
You know, another good thing your book, The Color of Food, celebrates is that rural America and farming areas aren't quite as lily white as we imagine. You know, sometimes you listen to country music and think everybody out in the country's a redneck, but there's a lot of people of all backgrounds that are farmers.
Most definitely. And, you know, in the South where I'm from, the rural areas used to be just as many black folks and still do have very high numbers of diverse populations. You know, that those are really the roots for a lot of African Americans whose family stories go back to growing up on farms, whether it be, you know, family farms tracing further back to tenant farming and sharecropping. So that kind of rural family farm life is just as rooted in for Black families as it is white American families. And then you think about communities like Kevin's on the Cherokee Reservation, or Valerie Seagrest, a Muckleshoot tribe member out in northern Washington state, who grew up as an agriculturist, and what she would say is not only cultivating foods, but wild foraging foods and hunting, another, way of expressing food sovereignty. And all of these rural communities that are getting lost in the stereotype of what America calls, rural, the rural family.
So tell us a bit about what you think the future looks like. This movement's well on its way, but what do you think 25 years from now the food movement in North America might look like?
I really hope and advocate for a regional food system. I think that the more we have these conversations and the more we really support our communities that are doing revolutionary work in the food movement, the more we can kind of tackle some of these corporate and monoculture conglomerate efforts that are taking over our food system. And I think the question we have to ask ourselves is, who do we want growing our food? Do we want to know what's in our food? Do we want to be in charge? Do we want to have control over our food from whether we're talking about genetically modified seeds to healthy foods, foods that are important to our own cultures? Do we want to own the community farmers markets and the community stores? Or do we want to hand all of that over and tell someone else to do it for us? And so I get really hopeful with what I see happening in communities. And in 25 years, I hope that we can all come together and create some really powerful, revolutionary regional food systems.
Absolutely. And your book helps celebrate that and certainly promote it. The farmers that I know appreciate very much that they have real work to do on their farms, not just something that's made up. So thanks for your good work and your book, and for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Natasha Bowens, author of the book The Color of Food, Stories of Race, Resilience, and Farming. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Technology affects what we know about the world around us, how we interact with friends, and how we perform in school and in the workplace. And while the internet and digital technology seem universally available today, many have little or no access to either. We'll discuss this digital divide on the next Cincinnati Edition. We'll also talk with author Paul Loeb about living with conviction in challenging times. That's on Cincinnati Edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.